This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's our health and living segment, and in the studio with me, Professor Wu Yin Ling. She's a consultant gynecological oncologist from University of Malaya. We're going to be discussing ovarian cancer today because we all know it's a silent killer. Only because your ovaries are buried deep in your pelvis, there's nothing for you to feel and you can't really see very much. And so often diagnosis is made at a very much later stage. But recently, there was news about a new targeted treatment for ovarian cancer has been shown to be very promising, and the results of these women are in the advanced stage of the disease, which usually prognosis is very, very weak. So Professor Wu Yin Ling will be telling us a little bit more. Welcome to the show, Yin Ling. How are you today?
Thank you, Meera, for having me once again.
Wonderful. Can you tell us about this research? It shrank tumors in about half of the women who took part in this small trial. It's only 15 women. However, yeah, almost half showed some sort of treatment for
response.
Response, that's right. So, I mean, what were your thoughts on that?
This is a good opportunity to talk about a few issues, really. So that was a sensational piece of news. In fact, that was a great story of the power of a story of a woman. She was 68. She was in a terminal stages. She said that she had no options, whereas this opportunity for a clinical trial came about. And this was a trial looking at a small molecule that was targeted against a specific receptor that is said to be in the cancer cells, much more in the cancer cells and not in the normal cells. So this is the basis of targeted therapy, whereby you take a molecule that's not toxic to your body, because we are all quite well aware that chemotherapy has had a bad press of its side effects. So we are all looking into targeted therapy. So this was a small molecule called a folate receptor alpha inhibitor. Mm-hmm. Essentially what it did was, it was a molecule that prevented the uptake of folate into the cells, which is the basis for DNA and cell proliferation. So it stopped the cancer cells from proliferating. It was a, what we call a phase one clinical trial, whereby the investigators or the doctors basically wanted to see whether this drug was safe for human consumption or whether there were any unknown toxicities. So that's generally what happens in a phase one trial, whereby they get a small group of patients and they then see whether there are any sort of surprises, whether there are any side effects, and get an indication of doses to be used for subsequent phase two and phase three trials. To give you an idea, you, at this point in time, talking about targeted therapy for cancers, there are about more than 800 targeted therapies that are being investigated in various phases, but only about 5-8% will ever come into the market. Mm-hmm. So this was such a trial whereby there were 15 volunteers, all at their late stages, which is generally the case. And what surprised the investigators were that there were about 50% responders. There were about 7 out of the 15 that had a remarkable response. Now, for an individual, that means a lot. And that's what happened to this patient called Marion Heath, who yes, spoke to the media. She took it for 12 weeks. And the tumor and the pain shrunk. It disappeared. And that bought her a bit of time. And in fact, what has happened, the tumor has, since she stopped her treatment, the tumor has recurred, but it now makes it amenable to radiotherapy. And that's the basis for many targeted therapy. They don't cure you, but they prolong what we call progression-free survival. This is quite a difficult term to explain to a layperson. Targeted therapy is usually quite expensive and we have lots in the market. And if I'm a doctor, I want to explain that term to a patient. Look, you're going to spend quite a bit of money on this drug, which will not prolong your overall survival, but will improve your quality of life. I can understand that's quite a difficult concept for a patient to understand. You're making me better, but you're not curing me.
Yes.
But essentially, these are targeted therapy. They generally, not all of them, they generally improve the quality of life. But that's not a bad thing that you can't cure it, but because there are so many different options now, perhaps when one of the targeted therapy fails to work, you may then go on to the next option or the third option. So your clinicians and scientists are talking about turning cancer into a chronic disease.
Why is the prognosis for ovarian cancer is usually very weak?
First of all, it's discovered late. As we all, or the general not, or what we know is that 7 out of 10 women will present late. That reduces the survival rate, or the what we call 5-year survival rates, to about 40%. Now, if you diagnose it at an early stage, stage 1, you're talking about survival rates of up to 80%, which is very good. That's why it's been named as the silent killer. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to change that a little bit. We want to tell women that if it's not really that silent, we want to tell women to start listening to their bodies. Actually, it's not that silent. There are now enough studies whereby if we will ask women to look back, what were the symptoms? Well, there was a bit of indigestion. My trousers were getting a bit tight, but we put it down to aging or the menopause or putting on weight. So if we look back, there are usually some signs and symptoms that should alert us to see a doctor. Most women, having said that, would see a gastroenterologist in the first instance. So I usually tell patients, don't be so hard on yourself when they see the wrong doctor, they get a misdiagnosis, because it usually presents with gastrointestinal symptoms.
But if you go for your yearly checks and you do the
Pap smear?
You do a pap smear one, and then the other one is where they insert the probe to have a look inside the ovary, and to look at the ovaries and in what's happening in the womb. Is that not enough?
So what you're asking me is the screening modality.
Yes.
Some women go for screening in the form of having an internal scan.
That's right.
And a blood test called CA125. Let's look at how useful that test is, first of all. There are enough studies now to look at screening for ovarian cancer using an annual blood test and an internal pelvic scan. And that has been shown not to be an effective screening method. The reason being, the tumour marker CA125 is not a very specific marker. Now, what do I mean by that? So if, for example, if I'm having my period, or menstruating, and I take a blood test at that time, my CA125 will be elevated. If, for example, if I'm pregnant or I have other benign pelvic conditions such as endometriosis or some pelvic inflammatory disease, my CA125 would be elevated as well. CA125 is essentially a marker that the lining of the lung or the abdomen is irritated. So, if you were a man and you were having heart failure and your lungs were filled with fluid and you took a blood test, your ovarian cancer marker would be elevated because the lining of the lung is irritated. So, it is just a marker that there is irritation in the lining of the abdomen or the lungs.
Okay. So women present late is one reason. Any other reason why prognosis is so weak?
We currently treat ovarian cancer as one disease. So the therapy that we currently use at the moment, which consists of carboplatin, paclitaxel and surgery, is the standard treatment we offer all women with ovarian cancer. However, it's now becoming clear that ovarian cancer is not one disease. It is actually molecularly, and the genetic signature shows that it is actually a very heterogeneous, it's a mixed population. but we currently have only one definite tool to treat a disease that has many different behaviours. So we're not quite there yet, but that's where targeted therapy comes in. We try and look at the tumour, we characterise it better by genetic sequencing or various methods, trying to define what is it, what are its weak points, where is its Achilles heel, and then we try target it. But that has not become standard treatment as yet. So to sort of summarise why ovarian cancer still has a poor prognosis is because women present late, not because it's painless. Symptoms are subtle. Number two, we don't have a screening tool that works well. Number three, the treatment has lots of room for improvement. So okay. We still have a long way to go.
Okay. When we come back, we'll find out more about Angelina Jolie and how that sort of impacted ovarian cancer and awareness around the world on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's a Friday. Dr. George Lee not around. He's actually holidaying someplace, but in the studio with me, Professor Wu Yin Ling, consultant gynecological oncologist from University of Malaya. We're discussing ovarian cancer because there was some research that just came out to show phase one clinical trials where it has been a very promising targeted treatment for ovarian cancer, which seems to be quite promising for results in women who have an advanced stage of the disease. We do know ovarian cancer is a silent killer. One of the reasons being, as Prof. Wu mentioned just now, many women present late. Symptoms are very subtle. There is no proper or effective screening tool at the moment. And of course, in terms of treatment, we're still finding our way around this. Angelina Jolie made headlines a couple of years ago about her double mastectomy and the two genes, BRCA1 and BRCA2, which we know does cause breast cancer and to some extent ovarian cancer. That's I think there was some link to prostate cancer as
That's right. That's right.
And so because we have identified this gene, it makes targeted therapy even more effective and I suppose easier to actually get rid of that or work with the BRCA gene. So in Angelina Jolie, how did that impact ovarian cancer? Everybody spoke about breast cancer, Prof. Wu, at that time, but ovarian cancer was sort of a by the way. But I'm sure there was a lot that came out on the ovarian cancer front as a result of that, the whole Angelina Jolie BRCA gene thing.
It really opened the door for us to discuss genetic testing, the effects of genetic mutation and the risk of cancer. So Angelina Jolie had a test done after her mother died at the age of 57 from ovarian cancer. And so she discovered that she carried a mutation, BRCA1 mutation, which if you have it, your next generation will have a 50% chance of acquiring it. Now, what happens if you have a carrier of a BRCA1 mutation? Essentially, the lifetime risk of having breast cancer with that mutation is about 80%. Now, for ovarian cancer, it's about 40% if you carry the BRCA1 mutation. For BRCA2 mutation carriers, it's about 15%, 15 to 17%. We need to study this in different populations. And I'm very pleased to let you know that we now have some Malaysian data. And that's quite important because BRCA mutations, the rates are different in different populations. And among Malaysian patients who have ovarian cancer, we know that 12% of them are carriers.
Of the BRCA1 gene.
Of the BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene. So we now know that. That's the prevalence in the Malaysian population.
That's a breakthrough information, honestly. We hardly have data on Malaysia. That's fantastic.
But this has, not only that, this has led to a change in now how we do, how we manage ovarian cancer patients in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. In University of Malaya, in collaboration with private doctors, public doctors and Cancer Research Malaysia that's driving this research, we now have a multi-centre, multi-institutional collaboration whereby every single ovarian cancer patient diagnosed from 2015 can be offered or will be offered the opportunity to discuss BRCA testing and the implications for treatment and prevention. That's wonderful. That's first of its kind in Malaysia.
Prevention for future generations.
Correct.
Okay.
Not for future generations. You can't prevent the next generation from acquiring the mutation, but there are prevention measures that can be taken.
Sure. And what else? Angelina Jolie removed her ovaries. Nobody mentioned that, actually.
She did. So about a year and a half after that, there were so many write-ups in every single magazine. In fact, it led to something called the Angelina effect.
Yes.
Whereby everyone started to ask their doctors about having their... what was the mutation about? Can you have prophylactic or risk reduction breast surgery? But what was less publicized was the fact that she had both her ovaries out 2 years later or so. Now, how did that come about? She had an elevated CA125, which we spoke about earlier on.
Right.
So that gave her a little bit of a scare. But we know that after she removed her ovaries, the ovaries were normal. But that was that screening test that she had that gave her a little bit of scare, and she said, fine, I want to have this removed. So that led to quite a lot of discussions. Did Angelina Jolie do the right thing to have both her breasts, which were normal, and both her ovaries removed? If you go to a room with 100 women, you ask them that question, you will see a variety of answers.
I mean, I wouldn't do it. So hats off to Angelina Jolie, honestly, because it doesn't mean that she will not contract cancer.
Correct.
She still has that chance of, you know, actually...
A small risk of cancer.
Absolutely. So what was the reduction rate by removing the breasts and the ovaries?
So you reduce it nearly by 90% for ovarian cancer. So you're right, it's not 100%.
No.
Because what we call ovarian cancer can still present as a cancer of the lining of the abdomen, which is called primary peritoneal cancer. The management, the treatment is identical to ovarian cancer.
So I'm always thinking, what if... the 10% chance that you don't ever get it in your entire life.
So that's where we are all different. That's where we are
all different. I know. What were your thoughts on it, though, when you first read it? I just thought, she's a really brave woman.
You see, I have a biased opinion on this because I look after patients with cancer. And to me, if you can reduce the risk by 90%, that's a very good thing to have done. So for me personally, if I know that I will remove 90% the risk of getting ovarian cancer, I would personally do it. Because I treat women with ovarian cancer and therefore the personal experience comes in. And in women with a family history, they usually grow up seeing people close to them having battled cancer. And so that personal experience adds to their own decision.
And we can screen for BRCA1 now.
Yes,
it is available here in Malaysia.
It is.
You do
it
at University of Malaya as well.
There are also companies who do that. So for anyone who's listening and who has a family history of ovarian cancer or a strong family history of breast cancer, they can certainly go to a specialist, either a specialist breast surgeon or an oncologist or a gynecological oncologist, and information would be given to them. If you talk about 10 years ago, we don't have such knowledge. We don't understand it that much. But I'm pleased to let the listeners know that we've come quite far. Doctors are now able to explain more about the risk factors associated with the genetic mutation.
I suppose it will only get better from here. You will only find out a lot more from here, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why is it so difficult to treat, though? Although it's advanced, yes, I can understand. But why is it so difficult? Is it a very aggressive cancer?
You know, I think we're still trying to understand the biology of it. And we talk about the cancer being plastic, which means that it changes its character. You develop, the cells develop drug resistance. So let's look at it this way. So, for example, if a cancer consists of 100 cells, and 80 of the cells are sensitive, they die with the standard treatment, you're left with 20 cells. The 20 cells may have different characters and they may need different drugs to treat them. And so what doctors and scientists need to do is learn how to characterize the weak points of these cells that are left over. Some cancer are easy to treat because they are contained. They're contained as a lesion, a lump, and you remove it by surgery and you deal with potential sort of spread with chemotherapy later on. But ovarian cancer is a disease that is disseminated. It means that when a surgeon opens the perform surgery, you can see various areas within the abdomen that's involved with cancer. So it's not just a collection of tumour, it's actually a spread of tumour within the abdomen.
Ina, you've worked as an oncologist for a very long time. What is it about cancer that you find intriguing? I mean, just you telling me of the character and how it takes on so many different roles and personalities, those cells. I mean, they're rogues. They're absolute rogues. How did they, you know, become so prominent in the human body that we're struggling with cancer today?
We're still trying to understand it. And I have to confess that with time, I feel more and more inadequate because of the explosion of technology that is used to understand the cancers more, the explosion of drugs that are being trialed to look at ways to treat them and to diagnose them. You talk about the folate receptor earlier on as a targeted therapy. You can also use these receptors as diagnostic tools. So you attach a little fluorescent molecule to these special receptors and you see these cells light up in, say, what is similar to a PET scan.
Mm-hmm.
So the technology is exploding so quickly. The therapy, the options are exploding so quickly as well. Just yesterday when in preparation for this talk, I just looked at the literature again. Wow, another 2 to 3 new targeted therapy. So as a clinician, yes, it's intriguing, but it's also a great, great responsibility to really try understand these tools and these treatment and how do you use them on patients who are all very unique.
Absolutely. Unique is
It is such a difficult and it's a big responsibility.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that this targeted therapy is going to work for everyone.
Correct.
It's going to benefit some and it's not going to benefit some. So is that done by trial and error or how does that work?
So let's use the Angelina Jolie story, the BRCA patients who have ovarian cancer and carry the BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutation. We now have a targeted therapy that's readily available in the market that is beneficial for such patients. Its trade name is Lynparza and its molecular name is Olaparib. So there are a special class of drugs that can be used for patients with ovarian cancer who have the BRCA1 and 2 mutation. So these are the patients who have received treatment before. So they've tried chemotherapy on 2 different occasions. And these group of patients will now benefit from this new targeted therapy. And you can get a response of up to 50% of them will respond to these tablets. So it is a breakthrough. As a patient with ovarian cancer, if you've gone through two cycles of chemotherapy, having to have blood tests, going into hospitals, you now have a treatment where you take tablets every day. And you don't have to go into the hospital as often and having to have needles put in. That's a breakthrough. That's the upside.
So what's happening is this targeted therapy is going in and it's going to intercept the mutating BRCA
cancer cell.
The cancer cell, and stops it from mutating. Is that what's going on?
No. So what happens is that the BRCA gene and the BRCA protein is very important for DNA repair. When that is mutated, the emergency DNA repair mechanism comes in with another molecule called PARP. What the new medication is, it is a break to, it's called a PARP inhibitor. It stops the second line or the emergency pathway from working. So you have a cancer cell that cannot repair its genes because their pathways for repair is damaged, and therefore the cancer cell dies.
Right, okay. Quite brilliant, isn't it? This whole idea of targeted therapy. I wish it would be more affordable and hence more inclusive for cancer patients where it's applicable, actually.
I think this is where we see advocacy groups, and we have to come up with innovative ways to see whether we can get these drugs cheaper. We can learn from the HIV world and from the patients, people who treat hepatitis. There was a time where these drugs were so unachievable because of the cost.
Absolutely.
And this was a disease that affected the poor. And now through advocacy, through clever mechanisms of financing, it's all available.
Yeah. Antiretrovirals for HIV. I think that's really quite amazing.
That's a phenomenally good story and something we can learn.
Yeah. I still remember having Prof. Adiba when we first started BFM, and it's 9 years later and the story has changed.
Correct. Yeah. And I hope that we will actually come to the point where we sit down here at some stage 5 years down the line or even sooner, where we can say these drugs are affordable for most people.
Fantastic. We're discussing ovarian cancer. Up next, we'll quickly go through the risks, who is at risk, and hopefully Prof. Wu will give us something to take away before we leave. On the bigger picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. If you have just joined us, welcome Professor Wu Yinling, consultant gynecological oncologist from University of Malaya, in the studio with us. We are discussing ovarian cancer, which is termed the silent killer. Prof. Wu has mentioned that prognosis can be very late. Prognosis can be poor because a lot of women present late. You can't feel it. You don't really know it's there until it's very advanced. And so that's very much been a challenge in terms of the management or even detecting ovarian cancer. You have mentioned, Prof. Wu, that the screening test of CA125, which is a blood test for
Correct.
That protein, is relatively not the best screening tool. And so that makes it a little bit more of a challenge. But recently we had news that there's been a new targeted treatment in phase one trials for ovarian cancer, which seems to be quite promising. And that's why we're discussing ovarian cancer and that promising breakthrough, actually, which hopefully will go on and hit the shelves later on. Who's at risk, Prof. Wu? You mentioned those who have the BRCA1, BRCA2 gene. Who else? I was reading that women who have fertility problems could possibly have a high risk of ovarian cancer.
Yeah.
Is that true?
So where this information came from was from observational studies. We know that women who go through multiple cycles of ovarian stimulation are associated with having a higher risk, slightly higher risk of developing ovarian cancer. But that needs to be taken into account in terms of the other risk factors, because for the longest time, we know that women who have children and who breastfeed are at lower risk of that. So whether it's associated with purely with the fact that they are subfertile as opposed to the stimulation associated with fertility treatment. But that's also the basis for the protective effect of the combined oral contraceptive pill. We look at huge population studies, and we know that women who take the combined oral contraceptive pill for about 4 years or more have a 50% reduction in the risk of developing ovarian cancer and endometrial cancer for that matter. So if you work by first principles, you think that if you've suppressed the activity of the ovary and that reduces the risk of ovarian cancer, perhaps the stimulation of the activity of the ovary by fertility treatment then leads to the increased risk of ovarian cancer. So that's sort of the known risk factors to ovarian cancer. The other one is, of course, family history, not necessarily associated with the BRCA mutation. There are many other sort of genetic mutations that we are still trying to grapple and to discover that's associated with ovarian cancer. They may not be known as a gene now, but we know that there's a family history. So family history is also associated with a bit of an increased risk. Obesity is also associated with an increased risk. So these are some of the known risk factors for ovarian cancer.
Do you think we've done well in Malaysia in managing ovarian cancer?
I think we can do better.
Always can do better. But what have been some of our achievements?
I think one big achievement that we have now is that we understand the genetic component in the role of BRCA 1 and 2 mutations in patients with ovarian cancer. Women are also being managed. Women with ovarian cancer are increasingly being managed by doctors and teams that are used to or have experience in dealing with ovarian cancer. That's quite an important thing. Studies have shown throughout the last 20 to 30 years, if someone has ovarian cancer, they should be managed by a team who's familiar with the management. The person who does the surgery must be someone who does the surgery, you know, not once a year. So that is the determining factor for the prognosis. When we perform the surgery, in the developed world, it's usually done by a gynecological oncologist, and they don't do anything else except deal with cancer surgery. But in Malaysia, we don't have so many to go around, but increasingly, we have that awareness, and our colleagues are working together to ensure that these patients are managed by the right teams of doctors. So that's a big improvement. So, for example, in our center, when we discuss ovarian cancer patients, I don't make the decisions on my own. We sit down with a radiologist, the oncologist, the surgeon, and sometimes even the colorectal surgeon, and we decide what is the best way, what do you think will work best for this particular patient. So that's important.
Your message on ovarian cancer?
It's not a silent killer. Listen to your body. Go seek professional advice, healthcare advice, if you are worried. And there are experts around to help discuss and manage the situation.
Symptoms again, Prof. Wu?
Non-specific abdominal bloating, persistent abdominal bloating, reduced in appetite, pelvic pain and back pain that's persistent, and urinary and bowel symptoms that's persistent.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Prof. Wu Yin Ling, consultant gynecological oncologist from University of Malaya, speaking to us about ovarian cancer on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.